I just like recap. I'm trying to recap all of the faces that came in and out of the two like headlining primaries of this season on both the Republican governor's race and the Democratic Senate race. You know what's funny? What I forgot that Chris Larson joined and dropped out before Rebecca Clayfish had even announced her candidacy. Do you remember that? Like of all the at one point there was like 14 candidates. And there's still, I mean, technically, of candidates who have not dropped out, it's Mandela, who is heavily favored, Stephen Alacara, Daryl Williams, Peter Prakarsky, and Cooley. Is that the...
I don't even know.
You don't even know. And so, because I know that... So you kind of tipped your hat to this in the article that you wrote this last week for Recombobulation Area on... Because there was enough people, Stephen Alacara being one of them, that tried to say that this turn of events was, you know, not letting the voters choose and like heavy-handedness by the party and blah, blah, blah. And I've talked to mixed people of like that either think that that was the case or think that the candidates just saw the writing on the wall and that there was no path to victory and that it's better to get behind one candidate so that we like there can actually be a chance to beat Ron Johnson. How did you interpret it? Like, did that aspect of it bother you at all? Like, not quote unquote letting the voters choose?
Yeah, I think, you know, in a perfect world, you of course would want voters to decide on this, but I think there are, like you mentioned, so many of the larger dynamics at play with this particular race that I think made the decision by the three, you know, top challengers to drop out a smart one. And I think so much of the messaging that we've heard from these candidates throughout the campaign was that, you know, the most important thing is getting rid of Ron Johnson. You know, they didn't take a lot of digs at each other. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of criticism, you know, of fellow candidates or of the front runner. Like, you know, I think the candidates generally agreed a lot on policy on a lot of the big issues. And so once some of the polls were breaking, you know, last week and the week before, it was becoming clear that Barnes was going to run away with this. And I think, you know, one of the things that I had been hearing, even in the wake of that Marquette poll from June that put Lazry kind of in striking distance, I think some people were wondering even then if he had hit his ceiling. Because he had been spending on TV since October of last year. And so how many candidates left were him for him to reach? And so there were still a large number of undecided voters. And as those undecided voters started to break, they were really breaking pretty strongly for Barnes, who had opened up kind of basically a 15 percentage point lead over Lazary as the top challenger. So once you get into it, if you have a situation where, hey, the most important thing, as we've been saying for more than a year, is getting rid of Ron Johnson, what's the point of criticizing Barnes if he is going to be the likely nominee to go against Johnson in the fall? So I think just the shadow of Johnson, of Ron Johnson in this race, loomed really large. And I think that is the kind of the main reason why things broke the way they did. And also, I think, you know, as people were paying attention to this race later on, Barnes was really picking up steam. I heard a lot of people when I was in conversations with people saying, hey, it's Barnes' race to lose. And it always has been. Well, he didn't lose. He kept picking up steam, getting more and more endorsements, you know, having some of the energy that you want to see from a candidate in a high profile race like this. And you know, it was Barnes' race to lose and he didn't lose.
And what do you think, as someone who followed this really closely and has been writing about it, like, because like we said, the race itself had been kind of sleepy and there wasn't a ton of differences on policy as far as where the candidates were standing. So what was it? What do you think it's either about his personality or his message or track record, or like, what is it that you think? Because it's not, you know, we know how much Lazary's, like, how much money Lazary was putting in of himself. So it wasn't necessarily a money thing. So what was it about the way he ran his campaign that you think really let him run away with this?
I think it was really about, you know, the word that came up the most when I was talking to Barnes supporters throughout this race was coalition. So it's really about building that coalition to take on Johnson, and building a broader coalition that includes progressives and moderates and everything in between. You know, you look at some of the endorsements, the national endorsements that he piled up over the course of the campaign. You know, you had progressives like Elizabeth Warren. Later in the race, Bernie Sanders endorsed him. But you also had folks like Representative Jim Clyburn, who was more of a moderate, who endorsed Biden and famously put him over the edge in the South Carolina primary in 2020. And Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, you had Cory Booker. So I think within Democratic Party, you know, Mandela Barnes is really well liked.
Yeah.
And I think he you know, built that coalition that I think is trying to speak to both the progressive wing and the moderate wing of the party. And to Lazary and Godlewski's credit, I think they did not turn this into the really annoying left versus center debate that the Democratic Party has been bogged down in for so many years. It didn't turn into that kind of debate because I think they aligned on a lot of policies. I think, you know, they're all talked about the need to get rid of the filibuster, to get so many of these bills that have stalled in Congress over the finish line. And so I think it was less, the divisions between the candidates were less of like the ideological left versus center than I think some may have anticipated this race could have turned out like.
Yeah.
And Barnes didn't put himself in a position to you know, really become that left versus center type of debate either, for this to become that type of a debate either. So I think he ran a really strong campaign. He focused on coalition building. There's lots of local elected officials that have endorsed his campaign too. So it's the coalition more than any factor, I think.
It was interesting. This is totally anecdotal and like there's no like heavy numbers behind it. But as I was scanning the Wisconsin subreddit to look for topics and just things that maybe aren't on the, you know, the homepage of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that other people are talking about, whether it's funny or not. And someone had started, just asked, it said, hi Reddit, please share your stories of Mandela Barnes. And he said, you know, because we were, you know, he's probably going to be the candidate. And he said, I'll start. I met Barnes while working at the River West filling station. Some information about Ron Johnson was spreading about COVID and when it was most dangerous. I said, hey, I just want to let you know that I think Ron Johnson is a real piece of and I appreciate that you're running against him. And he looked me dead in the eye, shook my hand and said, thanks. That means a lot to me. And then there's a subsequent 56 different comments from different people, all sharing stories of meeting him at one point, like not knowing him personally, and they're all really positive. And so, like, I, you know, and I know Mandela, like I'm friends with him, and so I obviously like I am biased as far as being friends with him and knowing him. But it was kind of cool to flip through all these strangers and who've all had really positive interactions with him. And I don't know, like I think that kind of goes to what you said as far as like he's also just kind of likable.
Right. I think, you know, he's in Milwaukee, at least, I think he's has a pretty good reputation for being, you know, a politician that is this visible in the community and is not like some sort of inaccessible guy. Like he's so much of his campaign, too, I think, you know, that will translate from the primary to the general election is playing up his working class roots. Mm-hmm. You know, he's talked a lot about his father who worked third shift for GM and was part of the UAW union, his mom being a public school teacher. Those are things that you know, that Democratic voters in particular, working class voters can really relate to. And so I think the more we got into the primary, it became a hard thing for someone like Alex Lazary or Sarah Godlewski, who are self-funding their campaigns to a large degree. You know, are you going to self-fund the campaign to go after a guy in Milwaukee with working class roots? Like,
yeah,
that's a tricky way to thread the needle there. So,
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, because I think this is going to, now that we're, once we get into the general, I think it's going to be really ugly. Like, I think it's going to be really, really ugly. And
No doubt.
And hopefully, you know, we'll just see how it goes and how things, like, you handle, like, each side handles it. And also how that lands, right? Because I, you know, I don't know. It's going to be annoying, I think, watching not only that race, but then also how ugly the governor's race will inevitably be as well, which has already been ugly as far as this duke out between Clayfish and Michaels. And to me, it's like, I think he's the front runner. Like, I think he, like, if there's new polling, that Michaels might actually clinch this. But I feel like every day we hear a new headline of, like, he has no idea what his stance is on anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, are you endorsing Trump for president in 2024 or are you not? Like, within a 24 period, it's like, oh, nope, I am backing him in 2024. It's like, nope, I don't know where I feel about contraception. Nope, oh, no, I'm for contraception. It's like, every day is kind of like a, let's walk it back. Like, I didn't actually mean to say that. I don't know. Stop looking at my sweaty lip.
Yeah, it's, you know, in a past version of the political world, would he have been criticized for being a flip-flopper?
I almost would.
He's kind of all over the place. Like, I was joking about that on Twitter. Just like, you know, he seems hard to peg on a lot of these issues. They ask him a straight answer, and he's like, gives a lot of these, we'll have to look at the details types of responses, which is just like the easiest
non-answer.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if that makes him, to me, it's like, how do you vote for this guy? Because you have no idea what he stands for. Like, what he actually, like, is he just a rogue business guy who's in this because he really thinks he can make a difference? Is he is there someone behind him who's kind of like the puppet master? It was like, this is the kind of the like administration we want to run if we get you in there. Was he propped up just because people were worried that Rebecca can't be Evers? Like, it's such a weird thing to me. And because I have zero pulse on like the inside background and like the right wing of this state, I don't know what to make of it. But it's just every day when I read the headlines and then read the articles, I'm like, what is his platform on anything?
You know, one of the things that I'm going to be really interested to see when we have the primary next week is what the map looks like between Clayfish and Michaels voters, because I think the challenge for Clayfish, you know, even going back to what she started to the campaign last year, it was going to be, is she going to do a Leah Vukmir 2.0 type of campaign where she struggles to bridge that like Waukesha County base Republican Tea Party, Scott Walker base of the party with the more rural Trump base that has kind of that the party has kind of become in the years since Walker lost in particular. So is it going to be the type of map where you see a lot of Michaels support in rural areas of the state, you know, places outside of the WoW counties, and then is Clayfish going to do really well in the WoW counties of the inner ring, exurb, suburb areas? So I think that's going to be really interesting. And like having, you know, I've family in the Fox Valley, going to the Fox Valley, I didn't see any Clayfish signs. That's all Michael signs.
Well, and I also wonder, like, are women going to vote for her? Like, of the Republican women, like, where do they fall? Do they like her? Or do they not like her? Because I feel like there is potential conclusions to draw as far as just kind of like internal misogyny on the right side of the aisle. And, you know, not that Kristi Noem, who's a strong, you know, Republican, Nikki Haley, there's obviously has been executive Republican women in other states. But like, I think it's ignorant or naive to think that that's not part of this, too. It is just that she is a woman, regardless of her policy stances.
Certainly a factor. Absolutely.
All right. Well, let's take another break because I want to talk about a race that I think in many years would have been a foregone conclusion, but now maybe it's not because Trump, kiss of death or the pathway to heaven. I don't know, but we'll talk about that race when we come back. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bryant.